Josh.
Tom.
Josh, do you remember the era of promotional VHS tapes?
I do. I actually have some of them in a glass case right next to me right now.
Do you have the tape for the game we're going to talk about today?
I don't. I have the Majora's Mask one.
Oh, there was a Majora's Mask one? Wow.
Yeah.
So for listeners who maybe didn't grow up in Nintendo or who maybe didn't grow up with VHS tapes, they were the precursor to DVDs and Blu-rays. And in retrospect, they were terrible, but a lot of people still pretend they were great. It was the means of getting movies at home. And Nintendo spent a couple years making these little promotional videos that they would send out, I assume to like Nintendo Power, or just if they had your address on file from you being a customer of any kind, they would send these to you. And that's how games like Star Fox and Diddy Kong Racing first got revealed to the public, you know, because there was no internet, so we couldn't have Nintendo Directs. So they sent the Nintendo Directs to you.
Didn't the same thing happen with Pokemon?
Oh, the Pokemon promotional VHS tape was like a momentous occasion in my childhood. A tape showed up at my house and told me all the ways that I was going to be spending money for the rest of my life.
And are you still spending the money on those Pokemons?
I just spent close to $200 building a competitive Pokemon trading card game deck because I got sucked into that game again and I'm trying to compete. So yeah, that tape foretold the rest of my life.
Okay.
But what other tapes do you have besides the Majora's Mask one?
So I have the Majora's Mask one. I have a Toys R Us one from Midway Arcade, which shows us what the new Mortal Kombat game is. Mortal Kombat Anthology.
Oh, wow.
Sub-Zero.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have another one. It's the Bucky O'Hare series as well. Those are the ones that I have right now. I am looking to track down the one that we're going to be talking about here. But give me one second. Let me take a look at mine, and I'll be right back.
Your collection?
I'm still talking.
Sure.
I'm just going over to my glass case right now. Opening up my glass case, and I'm opening up, I'm looking at the one, it's in my hand right now. Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, featuring a sneak peek of Banjo-Tooie.
What?
Is in the one that I have right now. So,
well, speaking of masterpieces that should be put inside glass display cases, this is a cast of the past. No, I'm sorry. That's your job.
No, you can do it.
Oh, I could do it today.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of masterpieces that should be in a glass display case, this is a cast of the past where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Tom.
And I'm Josh.
Oh, this is so bizarre.
Isn't it weird?
It is. You do such a good job of driving the car. I feel like the teenager with the permit, and you're my dad, and you're like, well, son, time for you to get behind.
It's time to let you drive around the parking lot.
And then I crash into the Kmart. Oh, but yes, Josh graciously one day was just like, Tom, do you want Banjo-Kazooie, a game I know is one of your favorite games of all time, to be an episode? And I was like, oh, more than anything.
Yeah. The year was 1998.
I think that was a good
year. Was it?
I don't know. I don't.
I think one of the worst decisions ever made came in the year 1998.
What was that?
In pop culture, Tom, Marvel offered the cinematic rights to almost all of its characters to Sony for $25 million.
Is this around the time where Marvel was like on the verge of bankruptcy?
It was. Sony rejected the offer and only purchased the rights to Spider-Man for $10 million.
And
believing that movie audiences would only care about him.
I mean, in retrospect, that was quite a steal for Sony.
Yep.
They got him on the cheap. And look how Spider-Man has been a cash cow for them. And, it's why they won't give it back.
Yeah. And it's so sad. It's so sad. Just stop it. Just give him back. Let him come home.
This is the ugliest custody battle in the history.
But other than an ugly custody battle, what famous file format was created in 1998.
Was it an audio format?
It could be.
Is it a format that this podcast has appeared in?
It is.
Was it MP3?
It is MP3.
Wow. Little did they know how many MP3s would be stolen in the next couple years. Okay.
And according to a book published in 2007, what ended in 1998?
This is a tough one. I'm sorry. Cause so many things could have possibly ended in 1998. I very strangely don't have. Well, you know what ended in 1998? Me living in the single digit year range, because that's the year I turned 10. So you turned 10 as well, I believe. Just two months earlier than me. I don't know, Josh. What ended in 1998?
On the grounds of Hogwarts Castle, Harry Potter defeated Lord Voldemort.
I'm pouring through actual history because you set up. Yes, that is where the Wizarding War came to an end in 1998.
Yep.
We just wouldn't learn about it for another 9 or 10 years.
Exactly, yes. That's why I said it was in 2007. It ended
the secret,
according to 2007.
This secret history that we never knew about. Oh, I really feel like I feel like I'm in 1998 now, Josh. I feel like I've been taken back. Oh.
So, Tom, tell me about your history with Banjo and the Squeaky Kazooie.
Oh, well, they are my boys. In terms of my Kazooie's a girl, but she's an honorary boy. In terms of my overall boys,
she's like one of the bros. Yeah.
Yeah. There is Babu Frick, who is my newest boy, also my son. Banjo-Kazooie is up there. Perfect Cell is one of my boys. Not Imperfect Cell. I don't like associating with him, but Perfect Cell is a boy. Josh,
I mean, he's perfect.
You're obviously a boy.
Oh, thanks. I'm one of the boys.
My MAGFest boys are obviously boys. And but Banjo has a special place in my heart. I first met Banjo in the best kart racing game of the 90s, which was Rareware's Diddy Kong Racing. He debuted as a playable character there. I didn't really play as much because, in my opinion, Tip Top is the best racer in that game. But that's where I first became aware of him. And then one day I get a VHS tape, like we talked about in the opening, narrated by John Lovitz of SNL and The Critic fame, who talked about this extremely charming new platformer that looked like Mario 64, but just way more wacky and out there. And it was called Banjo-Kazooie. And this VHS tape took you literally through every level of the game. Like, not telling you how to beat anything, but it just, like, told you, we're going to have a desert, and we're going to have a snow level like all platformers had, but we're also going to have cool things like this creepy industrial pollution ship and a giant tree that changes with the seasons. So yeah, I was hyped for this game, and when it came out, I bought it, and I played it religiously. It's one of the times in my life where I've bought the strategy guide before I got the game. Have you ever done that?
Yes, I actually did.
Which games?
I do not want to talk about the game that I did it
Was
for.
It a bad game or a shameful game?
Do you know, I wouldn't say it's a bad game, because I remember it being amazing, and I don't want to go back and play it, because I know that it probably isn't. It was the Star Wars Episode One video game based off of the movie.
Oh, okay. So
it's a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic game.
I've heard fond things about it. I just didn't have a PlayStation, so I could not play it.
I have it for the PC if you want it.
Well, we can talk about that. But yeah, okay. So this is a game where there's a couple games in my childhood that like I had the strategy guide for, but this one was where I was reading the strategy guide anytime I wasn't playing this game. That's how obsessed with it I was. So I could probably say that Banjo-Kazooie is one of those games that I know like the back of my hand. And a point of pride that I once had is when this game was ported to the Xbox Live Arcade in 2008, I beat the game in like 7.5 hours. And for a little bit, I can't say how long, and I can't even say where I am now, but I was in the top 100 completion times on the Xbox Live leaderboard. Not like extremely high. I was like in the 80s, but I was proud of that. So yeah, this is a game
that's awesome.
It's written into my DNA.
Going off though of what you just said, I noticed there was one flaw in what you were talking about.
Oh?
And it was in 1999 was the greatest kart racer that was made, which was Crash Team Racing.
Crash Team Racing makes M&M Kart Racer look like Mario Kart 8.
Don't say that. That's rude. That's rude.
No, I just didn't get to play Crash Team Racing as a child, but I've heard it's very good. We played it in Bethlehem at the PlayStation Live event that there was no line for, and I had fun with it, you know. So. But yeah, Diddy Kong Racing, I still love it. It's good. But Dad, what about you, Josh? What's your history with Banjo and Kazooie?
So I know about Banjo. I know about Kazooie. Mm-hmm. I'm a retro game fanatic.
Yes.
But I never played this game until recent memory.
So I am curious about that, because you are the one who pitched this episode, and I know you don't really care for N64 games, and I know you don't really care for 3D platformers. So what led you to want to do this?
So this year, one thing I've kind of made myself do, or I'm making myself do, is play games that I've never played before. Play games that have been critically acclaimed to be the best of its, you know, genre, and games that I never did it. So whether it's Banjo-Kazooie, whether it's Dark Souls, whether it's Knights of the Old Republic, all these games that I've never played that people hold in such high esteem. Like, you mean to tell me you never played it? You mean to tell me you never played it?
Yeah.
Like, no, I never did, and I'm going to find out firsthand if it's as good as everyone made it out to be. Or are we looking through it with rose-tinted glasses?
I get that a lot as, like, you know, the movie guy in a lot of people's lives. You know, if anyone finds out I didn't see, you know, one particular movie, I get crapped on eternally. So I feel your pain there. Did you get to play KOTOR yet this year, or are you working towards it?
I did not.
Oh,
I will be working towards it. I am currently going through Dark Souls 3 right now because I liked Dark Souls 1 a lot more than I expected to.
Okay.
And everyone says skip 2, play 3. So I'm playing 3 right now, and I'm enjoying it a little bit more than the first
future
one.
Spoiler, we got to do KOTOR, you know?
Okay, yeah, I do currently have KOTOR for the original Xbox, but it is backwards compatible on the Xbox One. In up-res, like 1080p, I think it's playable, in, which is awesome. So, yeah, I'll probably jump into that a little bit down the road here.
All right.
But Banjo-Kazooie, I've known about them for a long time. People are saying that, you know, it's one of the best, what do they call it? Collect-a-thons?
Yeah.
Is that the thing that they would classify this as?
Like a collect-a-thon platformer that, you know, Mario 64 a little bit kicked off with, like, collecting stars, and then these type of games pushed way further with, like, multiple different kind of collectible items within a game.
Yeah, you got, what, Donkey Kong 64, you had Conkers, you had Banjo, you had Bubsy 3D.
Yeah, Gex, you had Glover.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those games came out all around the same time, too. Except for my boy Crash, he didn't want to jump into that.
Yeah, he stayed on linear paths, kind of.
Yep, he had respect for himself.
He knew his limits.
Yes.
I mean that in a good way. I do like the Crash Bandicoot games that I played.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it was kind of always the game that I was like, I might play it later down the road. And then it came out for the Xbox 360. And I was like, well, I'll download that. And then it came out on the Rare Replay. And then I'll get that too. I've never played them, and I was like, you know what? I'm like, this is the year of me going through now and kind of replaying all those games, so let's find out
how
good it actually is.
Well, Josh, how about I take us through the nitty-gritty, and then we can get into this game.
Sure.
All right.
Take it away.
So Banjo-Kazooie was released on June 29th, 1998 for the Nintendo 64. It was developed by Rare, originally published by Nintendo, although now Rareware as a company is owned by Microsoft, so they handle it from now on. And it was designed by Greg Mayles. And as far as genre goes, this is a platforming action adventure game.
What about that music?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm going to highlight the music so hard. But yes, the composer is Grant Kirkhope, who worked on other games like GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, and most recently the Yooka-Laylee series.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He has this history of being with the Rare team.
Well, he's done some things outside of Rare. He also did Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle on the Switch.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, Castles of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse,
which is a fantastic licensed game from the 16-bit era.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't want to spend this whole episode steamrolling because I have such a passion for this game that I could. So how about I set up our initial little adventure and then we can talk about it. Do you want to do level by level or do you want to do...
We can kind of just pinpoint, bounce back and forth, just have casual conversation about it. I think if you're listening to this, you probably clicked on it because you're like, oh, I remember that game.
Gotcha. Okay. So
right on it.
I think like most perfect platformers of this era should. It's got a very simple story. Mario's is just Peach is gone, gotta go find her. This story centers on Banjo, and who's a bear, and Kazooie, who is a breagle, a bird, and they live in this little secluded mountain forest area called Spiral Mountain. And very close to their house is the lair of an evil witch named Gruntilda. So they don't do a good job of, like, picking neighborhoods, you know what I mean? Banjo and Kazooie didn't ask the right kind of questions with their realtor. But Gruntilda is, like, your stereotypical ugly old witch, and she's just checking out the neighborhood one day, and she spots Banjo's sister, Tootie, and she's like, now there's a hottie. I need to look like her. And she kidnaps Tootie, with the plan being that she's going to use a magic machine she built to transfer Tootie's beauty into her. And Banjo and Kazooie are off on an adventure to save his little sister. And there you go. That's the plot of the game. Evil witch wants to do a bad thing. Got to stop her.
And I love that if you quit out of the game, it acts like you lost.
Yes.
Like, it acts like she actually, like, won.
Yes.
And she became Beauty, and it's just a nice cutscene that they have there.
Yeah, you witness the machine work. Gruntilda gets hot, and then Tootie is this ugly blob chungus thing, and it kind of implies that like Tootie is just going to be allowed to leave, like, you know, oh, I'm not going to imprison you now that you're ugly, just go get out, and she'll just have to live the rest of her life like that. Yes, but in order to
When it switched over, it reminded me of when the Powerpuff Girls tried to make another Powerpuff Girl.
That's such a sad episode. I forget, but that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah,
I forget the ugly Powerpuff Girl's name, but like she sacrifices herself in the end, and it's like actually sad. But yeah, so in order to save Tootie, Banjo has to go into the witch's lair and make his way through it. However, there are doors that are sealed off, and in order to open them, you have to either reach certain totals of jiggies, which are jigsaw pieces scattered throughout multiple levels within this hub world, or music notes, which are just like smaller tier items scattered throughout these worlds. So, you know, you're visiting unique locations, getting there's 100 musical notes in every level and 10 jiggies in every level. And the goal is to accumulate as many of them as you need to get through the game and, you know, save your sister.
And those aren't the only collectibles, though, in each level, though. Like
True.
You said, you have the jigsaw pieces, you have the music notes, you have the mumbo jumbo, like tiki heads.
Yes.
There's some feathers that you can get as well.
Yes, feathers allow you feathers allow you to fly. Every time, like, you flap your wings.
There's hidden creatures throughout the level. There's 5 of them, I think, in each level as well. Like, there's a lot of things to do in each of the worlds.
Yes, there are 5 Jinjos in each world. And if you collect 5, you get one of the jiggies for said level. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be pushing up my glasses a lot and being like, actually, they're called this.
No, that's fine.
But yes. On the course of the game, you meet a couple allies who also don't like Gruntilda for various reasons. within each world, there's this little shaman witch doctor guy named Mumbo Jumbo, and he has the ability to turn Banjo and Kazooie into different animals or objects based on the theme of the world. If you give him the Mumbo tokens that you mentioned earlier. So like in the first world, he can turn you into an ant so that you can climb up the ant mountain in the middle of Mumbo's mountain.
It's a termite.
It's a termite. It is. Oh, look, I'm getting schooled on my own game. I love it. I love it. But yes, it's a termite. And further in the game, there's a haunted house level and you get turned into a pumpkin who can go into small areas. So yeah, that's Mumbo's function. And he's like funny. He's got a lot of like humorous like one-liners. He's got a tragic backstory where Gruntilda messed his face up at one point, so he wears a big old like skull mask because he's presumably very ugly under there. And
right.
Within the hub world, there is Brentilda, who is Gruntilda's twin sister, but she's good. She looks like kind of like a fairy godmother mm-hmm. type. And
yep.
She will tell you personal secrets about Gruntilda, and they're all kind of very funny. It's like, oh, she wears like quadruple X large underwear, hee hee. And they seem kind of like incidental, but they play into part of the game's final level, which we'll get to. But yeah, Gruntilda is there to spill the tea on Gruntilda.
Yep. There's a Mr. Mole.
Bottles the Mole, yep.
Who kind of gives you the ability to do stuff throughout the levels, whether it's new attacks or different patterns or way to traverse the land.
Yeah. Yeah. Unlike Mario, yeah. You don't have everything at the beginning. Bottles is basically like a move on Locker, and you get that through, the more music notes you get, he'll be like, I'll teach you this move for, 270 music notes or something,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Josh, what did you think of this game as you entered Gruntilda's lair? Take me through your initial parts of the journey.
So, the story was kind of charming. And I was like, oh, okay, like, I understand, uh-huh. like, what you're getting at. It has a childish-type story, but kind of a, like, teenage-slash-adult-type mentality behind it.
Okay.
Which I kind of liked. Where it's like, the communication between like Kazooie and Bottles was great, like how they were just kind of back and forth at each other. Like Kazooie's kind of mean the entire time, and like
Kazooie throws like Banjo's shade kind at of everybody.
Like, yeah, and like Banjo's kind of like, well, hold on now, like trying to like be the middleman of the two. But I like that there was the world very colorful, very pretty. The cast of characters and stuff like that, as you're going through, like they all have their own traits and they're all enjoyable in their own way. And I did like that. And then leading up to Gruntilda, like just kind of getting a feel for the controls and the world and stuff like that. Like it was fine.
Nice. So Josh, I know that you are not a complete fan of 3D platformers. So I really got to know, please tell me your experience with this game and its mechanics.
Okay, so like I mentioned just a little bit ago, the cast of characters is fantastic. Uh-huh. The music is wonderful. The music is probably one of the best things about this game.
Sure, you want to detour and dish into that real quick, because I love the soundtrack for this game.
Yeah, I mean, Grant Kirkhope, it's so weird. Because when you hear Mario 64, you hear Donkey Kong 64, you hear Zelda, it all sounds like it came from Nintendo.
Okay.
And this didn't. This sounded like it came from the West. And it's true. I mean, like, it sounds American made.
Mm-hmm. Made in America. And
yeah, like I'm surprised it wasn't Kid Rock playing the banjo.
So Rare's a British company, so I just want to mention that. Like,
I know.
Okay, so go on. Anyway,
but I'm saying though, like it does sound like it's American made though. The way that it has that Southern style, that Southern twang to the music in this game, where it doesn't seem like it's anything we've heard before.
Gotcha. You want to know an interesting
and I really like that.
You want to know an interesting tidbit about the kind of inspiration for the music in this?
Tell me.
I went to a panel in, I think, 2016 or 17 at MAGFest, and Greg Kirkhope was there. And he said that a primary source of inspiration was actually the Beetlejuice soundtrack. And if you listen to the Beetlejuice theme and parts of this soundtrack, you really do hear it. It's not like in the exact instruments used, but it's in like the beat of the music.
Okay.
And that he said he combined that with one simple thing, and you do hear this in the music. It's that old kind of schoolyard taunt of like, nah, 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 like the way kids would tease you, like with that, like that's baked into it. So if you listen to two of those things like smashed together, you'll hear those influences in the soundtrack.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes,
coming out of the music, I hate this game.
Oh, no.
No, this game was bad. Like, it was not good.
Okay.
And it took me everything in my power to not tell you when we were hanging out that this is a bad game.
No.
Okay. Why do you think anything about this?
Okay. Why do you think
The controls were terrible. Mm-hmm. It's the worst swimming mechanics I've ever played inside of a game. Mm-hmm. There's too much collectible stuff. That's just because it's going right back to the Mario 64 style of let's just keep playing the same damn level over and over again just so you can, because we don't have anything else to show you in this game. It's terrible. It's not good.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well,
you guys are all living a lie that's 22 years in the making.
Well, you can believe that. But from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. And I'm very sorry to hear that. I have a question. What console did you play this on for this episode?
I played it on the Xbox One.
Mm. Okay.
On the Rare Replay.
Okay. It's interesting. The majority of my life I've played.
You think I'm going to plug an N64 into my TV and actually have that monstrosity appear?
I can imagine whenever you
You think I'm going to pay my electrical bill for an N64, Tom?
I can imagine if you were like a parent in the 50s and like your kid came home with an N64, you'd be like, not under my roof, and you throw it out the window or something. Like, get that devil magic out of here. Listen,
I will say this game has a wonderful cast of characters and the music is top notch for the era that it came out in.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it is a monstrosity.
Okay. All right. At what point did things kind of turn sour for you? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, when I was trying to swim under a damn mechanical shark.
Oh, under Clanker. Okay.
Oh, it was terrible.
Well, it was. I can't deny.
I was playing Dark Souls, and I was having more fun with Dark Souls than I was with Banjo-Kazooie.
Whoa, sir. Okay. Yeah, Clanker's Cavern. It is notoriously swimming reliant, and I'd be lying if I never said that I didn't run into problems in that level, because there are long stretches of the game that require you to stay underwater, and you have, you know, you have an air meter, like, well, not like in certain video games, like, you know, how in Mario 64, if you start running out of oxygen, he loses health. Banjo-Kazooie has it. They give you a little column of air bubbles on the side of the screen, and if you run out of those, then it starts ticking off your health. And yeah, there's been points mm-hmm. where I have gotten trapped in like tunnels or other parts of Clanker's Cavern and died. So
it's just the swimming mechanics are terrible. You have to press A for a light swim, but then you press B and he swims too fast and too hard, and then you can't control him when he's swimming too fast and too hard. But don't forget, you have to swim through the keyhole 3 times in order for the key to turn to raise the water up. But if you drown in that time frame, the key doesn't actually activate, and you have to go back and redo it again.
Well, what you do is you just time out holding in A to do the light swim, and you pivot through the keyhole. And also, there's the little fishy who is swimming around the keyhole.
Oh, yeah,
and he gives
you... you gotta watch it, because you might be a little bit too high, because the camera angles don't work that great, because you might be actually above the bubble that the fish is coming out,
okay.
And then you might be below the bubble that the fish is coming out, because the camera angles are terrible in this game, because the camera's terrible, because the game is crap. I am sorry. This has been building up for like 2 weeks now.
Well, you're wrong, but okay, let's get out of the Clanker's Cavern real quick. Admittedly,
let's keep going.
I will say that the game does hit this weird, I would say, darkness period in the middle, not just in like the tone of the levels, but like, yeah, like first level, Mumbles Mountain is like this colorful little like mountainside kind of jungle-esque area. Then second level, Treasure Trove Cove, it's a big beach area. How'd you feel about that? Did you enjoy that at all, or those first two?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't really enjoy it because, like, it's just
okay.
I wanted to like this game. Hear me out. Okay.
Sure.
I wanted to like this game,
mm-hmm.
and just the mechanics. And I don't know if it's why I hate the N64 stuff, but everything is too slippery.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're running and you go to stop and he still like kind of skids and like keeps going, like, and it's the same thing that happens in Mario 64, and it's the same thing that happens in Conker, and it's the same thing that happens in Donkey Kong 64. It's a lot of even in Zelda Ocarina of Time, it does that where you go running and then you like, oh, I'm gonna cut to the left, and it's like, no, hold on a second, like you're still slip, like everything's on ice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's just, if the game was a little bit tighter, I don't think we would have an issue. And the way I am perceiving this game right now is the exact way that everyone is complaining about Yooka-Laylee when it first came out, which is kind of weird.
Mm.
Oh, well, it doesn't feel this good, and the camera angles are terrible, and this is bad, and this is bad. It's weird, isn't it? That they're almost the same kind of conversations that we're having.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I guess this is the last episode of the podcast we're ever going to do. No, but
you come into my house and you disgrace my barren.
I'm never
going
to speak to you again. We're not friends anymore. I will say that I'm probably going to be me and try to like respectfully see your point of view, but I'm also going to be somebody who's played this game many times over the past 22 years. My fiance and I have a deep connection to this game. So I'm going to struggle to not just be 100% biased, but you know, this is a podcast where we like to have nuanced talk. So I will not deny that some of the swimming's a little annoying and that, you know, my favorite levels in this game don't involve the water at all, so I'll say that. I can imagine you had a hell of a time when you got to Rusty Bucket Bay, where you're swimming, but you're swimming in poisoned water, so your air goes twice as fast.
Oh.
Okay.
But don't worry, if you collect all of the jiggies and you collect all the music notes, you can have twice the amount of health at the end of the game.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
At the end of the game.
Yep.
At the end of the game.
At 889 musical notes, you unlock the final bonus door, or is it 900 exactly, I believe? And yeah.
It's 900 exactly.
Yeah, and you can get a red health honeycomb, which permanently doubles your health for the rest of the game. Yeah.
So at the end of the game.
In terms of the basic 8 levels, did you have a favorite at all that you enjoyed exploring?
I liked the first one.
Mumbo's Mountain?
Mumbo's Mountain was probably the only one that I kind of enjoyed, because it was like, I don't want to say it was like an introductory level, because Spyro Mountain was kind of your starter.
Oh, yes.
But Mumbles Mountain, like, it got you the basic mechanics that you needed to kind of just get through the level. Showing you how to shoot eggs out your butt. Showing you how to slam on top of them, break people's houses. Showing how to be an imposter and steal stuff from inside of people's homes. Going over and stealing from people and then giving them to people who already probably have more than enough that they need.
Wait, you're saying the little monkey, he didn't have any of the fruit, because the big monkey was...
Well, how do you know? How do you know that?
Because he was sad.
After you give it to him, he's there. And then you come back and he's there. Wait, hey, can you give me another one? Oh, hey, man, like, I know you did that for me. Can you give me another one?
He was hungry,
it's
Josh.
Weird. Like, he's hungry every time I
that
go back.
That big gorilla is the 1%, and that little guy is us, Josh. He's the little guy struggling under capitalism. And Banjo is the hero trying to correct the injustices between rich and poor. He's the Bernie Sanders of video game platformers.
But Mumbo's Mountain, I will say, was probably the only enjoyable world that I had. The music was great for it, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you not enjoy? So I will say that my favorite level in the game, just to throw it out there, that there's 8 levels. There's Mumbo's Mountain, like I said, kind of a jungle-esque mountainside. Treasure Trove Cove, it's a beach. Clanker's Cavern, it's this underwater kind of abandoned factory where a big robot shark lives, and there's a lot of water. Not a great level, probably my least favorite one in the game. Bubble Gloop Swamp, which is a swamp. Freeze Easy Peak, which is the snowy Christmas wonderland with a giant snowman in the middle.
Yeah, if you didn't think things got slippery enough when you were playing on the sand.
Yeah.
Gobi's Valley, which is a desert area that has a big old sphinx kind of at the center of it. Then there is Rusty Bucket Bay, which is this like shipping yard for a big old like tanker ship, and the water around it's poisoned. And then finally there's Click Clock Wood, which is a level that's based around this like forest with a giant tree in it. And so this is my favorite level because I just remember at the time I never saw anything so creative in a video game. When you enter Click Clock Wood, this level has its own hub level. And there are 4 doors. There's one for spring, summer, fall, and winter. And you unlock them one at a time. But you go into Click Clock Spring to start, and you get introduced to the level and the characters in it and the environment. And then through exploring that, you find the switch for the summer door. You hit it, and you leave. And when you come back in summer, like, all the details of the level have changed because it's advanced, you know? Like, it's the first time I saw, like, time pass in a video game, and you have to, like, account for that and deal with it. And I just, Click Clock Wood, I think, is one of my favorite, like, video game things ever. Like, it's up there with the it's up there with the portal gun, or
it's almost like a game inside of a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's levels inside of a level. Like, yeah. But you forgot Mad Monster's Mansion.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm up here gushing about this game, but yes, Mad Monster Mansion, which is a haunted house level.
Don't worry, Tom. I remember these things.
And I also remember specifically, I remember that Mad Monster Mansion is between Gobi's Valley and Rusty Bucket Bay. But anyway, Click Clock Wood is Bay, in my opinion. Were you not that wowed by Click Clock Wood?
I mean, it was cute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was unique, and it was a breath of fresh air almost from the rest of the levels that you went through.
Okay.
So I will give it a little pat in the back for trying to be, you know, different.
Okay.
In a world of a lot of things that were very similar.
Understood. Okay.
The reason I say that is because you think of every platformer. Oh, we have to have a water world, or we have to have a desert world, or we have to have a snow. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this was something, though, that was kind of a breath of fresh air almost.
Yeah, different and like good different, or at least creatively different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I think we're talking about, things that I thought was really cool at the time, is so you beat all the main levels, you get enough jiggies and musical notes to open the final doors to get towards Gruntilda. And what's the final thing standing between you and Gruntilda? It is a game show. Grunty's Furnace Fun is a game show that takes place between the final level and the final boss fight with Gruntilda. And Gruntilda's the host, and you have to walk around this game board where each space is a different kind of challenge. Some are like memory games where they'll show you a picture of something from the game or play a soundbite, and you have to like answer a multiple choice question. Sometimes you'll land on an enemy challenge space where they take you back to like a boss fight or like an enemy swarm battle and you have to win. And remember I talked about her twin sister Bruntilda earlier in the game?
Yep.
All those little pieces of gossip she told you about Gruntilda, there's questions based off those. So it pays to like remember them. And I, again, like we're talking about things that are breaths of fresh air. I can't think of like a platformer that has done something that cool. You know, I mean, I don't know how Bowser would host a game show for Mario or whatever, but just like, it's not just like beat the levels, beat the boss. It's like, here's something cool in the middle that kind of draws your attention to all the details in the game. I really like that. What did you feel about that?
I mean, that was fun. I'm trying to remember, there was another game that was very similar to that, but I keep going back to thinking of Undertale, where you run into the robot thinks he's a host of a game show.
He's like my favorite part of, I think he's one of my favorite parts of Undertale, and his song is like an all-time jammer. I have that on Spotify.
Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think, like, what was like happening back then that was like this, and all I keep going to is the Undertale thing, but I'm pretty sure that there was another game out there that did something similar to that. But yeah, no, you're right. It was Pokemon.
Oh, it was Pokemon. What was it in Pokemon that I'm not remembering?
When you go to the one gym in Pokemon. Oh,
Blaine.
Red, Blue, and Yellow.
Blaine's gym.
Yeah, he had the trivia game.
And if you got them right, you could skip the battles.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought there was something like that, but no, it was nice. It was a little bit of a break from the norm of just kind of running through and, you know, doing horrible battling mechanics to the game of pecking, shooting stuff out your butt, and then rolling around on stuff. It was nice that you kind of, you know, you let fate decide.
Okay. All right. So
we let the fate decide. Any musical notes are no good here. I need the money.
But anyway, so moving past that. Okay, so you know, you beat the board game and you get to face Gruntilda and you fight her on top of her lair. There's some ground combat. There's some aerial combat. And then you win and you send her plummeting to her doom and you go back and you get to hang out with your family again and your new friend Mumbo. And, you know, sun sets on this adventure. So, how did you feel about the final?
Pretty straight to the point.
How did you feel
story.
About the final boss fight? Although I kind of think I know how you feel about the boss fight.
I mean, it was fine.
Okay.
I mean, I kept saying I tried to like this as I was going through.
Okay.
I tried to find the good inside of it.
Okay. You mentioned that you liked the characters.
Yes.
So
I did.
I want to ask, who are your favorite characters in this game? And if you don't remember their names, I probably will. So even if you just want to describe them, I'll totally help you out.
Mumbo Jumbo is probably my favorite character. And I loved Kazooie just because she was such a dick.
She is a complete smartass. I agree.
And that's what I loved about her. But like I said, I mean, you got Chimpy, who, you know, was just out to keep stealing from Konga. You got, you know, all of the people's houses that you are a terrible person in this game.
Hey, he's like Liam Neeson in Taken, you know, like an important female member of his family has been kidnapped and he'll do anything to get her back.
Do you remember when Juju, they had the pillars there and you decided to shoot stuff out of your butt to like
destroy
the monument that they built?
And Juju's like,
that's
hey,
crazy.
Stop that.
Hey, remember when there was water in the boat that was preventing, you know, the boat from leaving the island where he was perfectly happy on being, and he decided to get rid of all the water in there? Remember when you decided to poop in the chest?
The treasure chest? Or
yeah, you decide to poop inside of it. Oh, there's nothing in me. Here, hold on a second. Let me take a dump right in your mouth. Like, Banjo-Kazooie are terrible people. And I understand it from Kazooie because she pretty much tells you from the beginning of the game that she is not supposed to be liked. And that's why I like her, because she's the only person who stays true to their character through the entire game.
Well, I will say that something that's funny about all the characters in this game is that they all kind of, to one degree or another, are a little terrible. It's undeniable. So within each level, you meet unique people, and they're all kind of dicks if we think about it. Like in Freeze Easy Peak, we've got Boggy, who is this polar bear dad who has forgotten to get Christmas presents for his kids. So a mission is like you get a Jiggy if you bring the kids their Christmas presents, which are scattered throughout the level. And then when you go find Boggy, he's like, oh, yeah, my kids don't have presents, but I don't really care. I want to race people on sleds. So he's not only selfish, but he's more interested in his own hobbies than his kids. And then we also have, like, on the tragic side, like, Gobi, the camel in Gobi's Valley. At first, like, he's tied to a rock, so he's miserable. He's a prisoner somehow. And when you free him, all this dehydrated camel wants is water, and you go and basically attack him. You slam down on the humps on his back to make him spit all that water out. So he's just taking abuse nonstop. What other characters? We got Mr. Vile from Bubblegoop Swamp, who is... he hosts his own little mini game, like, you know, who can eat more of these little, like, little wormy things. And when you turn into a when Mumbo turns you into a crocodile, Bubblegoop Swamp, like, he competes against you. There's,
What about Nipper? A big old, you know, hermit crab laying on the side of the island, and you walk over and hit him, and he even says, "You hurt Nipper." Makes me mad.
He's acting in self-defense. Who else? Like, there's
he's telling you that you hurt him.
There's Waza the walrus in Freezeezy Peak, who is whatever an animal version of a racist is, because anytime Banjo and Kazooie come near him, he's like, "Oh, it's a big smelly bear. Get off my lawn." But when you come up to when Mumbo turns you into a walrus in Freezeezy Peak and you come up, he's like, "Oh, you're one of us. I can trust you. Don't go near those stinky bears though." Like, yeah, he's kind of terrible.
And don't forget, if you get the 100% ending, you get the bikini girl with her giant melons.
Precursor to the sunflower in Conker's Bad Fur Day. They were just looking for some excuse, like, to work boobs into these
come
games.
Come on now. This is...
there's one... I think there's one character who is completely pure and innocent, and that's Irie the Eagle in Click Clock Wood, who, again, is part of what I think are, like, the cool mechanics of that game. You hatch him out of an egg in Click Clock Spring, and then... through summer and fall, you have to bring him worms to eat because he's a little baby. And then in Click Clock Winter, he's an adult and he thanks you for, like, raising him, and he gives you a Jiggy for it. And I think, like, of all the characters, he's the only one besides Tootie, who was also a kidnapping victim. You know, he's probably the only one who is not somehow bad.
Let's think about it, though. You said Irie, the bald eagle.
Yeah.
So you decide to pretty much raise the kid from child to adult. So you, being the horrible bear and bird, are going to take this kid under your wing, and he's going to turn out fine?
After all the horrible things
you two have just done?
I've listened to you say a lot of things on this episode. Don't you dare pollute Irie for me.
Now, I will say, I was thinking maybe Bottles is probably the nicest one. But no, he's like, "I'm only going to do stuff if you pay me."
He's a capitalist, yep.
Or I'm going to do this if you... Yeah, exactly.
He's bad.
These people are terrible. Brentilda is probably the only nice one.
Brentilda?
And she's just... Brentilda.
Yeah, she's not nice, though. She's talking shit on her sister the whole time.
That's fine. Her sister's...
Sister's horrible.
That's fine. Her sister is terrible as well, but at least she's a little bit nicer.
The family's supposed to stick together.
Like I said, the only this isn't Fast and the Furious.
Oh, okay. Well, she should watch those movies.
The only character in this game who stays true to themselves the entire time is Kazooie. Whoa. Kazooie doesn't try to be anything different. Kazooie knows that she's a dick, and she's fine with it.
Well, I can't disagree with you there. Kazooie is the most pure character in the game, just in terms of she's got that self-confidence, knows who she is.
What about Cheeto? Cheeto, he's actually in the game for you to cheat.
And what about... Nabbit, the squirrel, he promotes obesity because he eats too much of his nuts before winter, you know, like, no self-control. Yeah, there's a lot of characters in this game that kind of exhibit the deadly sins, you know, greed, of pride, things like that. Oh, that's hilarious. You mentioned.
I'm sorry. It wasn't a chest earlier that you were pooping inside of. It was Leaky, the broken bucket.
That's right.
That you decide to poop inside of.
Yes, and then he drains the water around the sandcastle.
Yeah.
So something that I wanted to bring up is you mentioned the 100% ending. So there is in this game there was this infamous thing called stop and swap, where after you beat the game, you find out that there were like certain parts of levels that you missed, and Banjo, like literally, like Mumbo shows them to you in like little like cutscenes. He's like, "Oh, look, here is a hidden egg in a part of Treasure Trove Cove that you never knew about." And Banjo's like, "Well, how do I get there?" And he's like, "You'll find out." And basically, this was part of a mechanic that they had planned for the sequel, where what it literally meant by stop and swap is if you were playing Banjo Kazooie, you were supposed to turn the N64 off, and within like a 10-second window, you were supposed to switch the cartridges to Banjo-Tooie. And the Nintendo 64's internal RAM was supposed to carry info between the two games. And that's how these stop-and-swap bonuses were going to be like unlocked. Now, unfortunately, they could never get that to work, and stop-and-swap has kind of existed in this janky half-state for years. I don't know if you looked into this, but in Banjo-Kazooie itself, the sandcastle in Treasure Trove Cove that we just talked about, like draining the water to access, that big alphabet board in it that you ground pound, that's also basically a cheat code entry tool. And using that is how you can unlock the stop and swap secrets within Banjo-Kazooie. I had to like look them up online as a child to like find this out, but you can like make the island rise up in Treasure Trove Cove to go get the egg, or you could make the ice key wall disappear by putting these codes in on the sandcastle floor. So that's a little,
right?
It's kind of like it was intended to be something else, but instead now it's something in there that you can find and go out of your way to get if you want to, you know, quote unquote, 100% this game. Let me just correct myself, because I believe it's in the Xbox Live version. They fixed it so that after you beat the game, I don't think you need to do the sandcastle. I think the bonuses just open, like the areas with the eggs, they open. And if you get them, when you play the Xbox Live version of Banjo-Tooie, you know, all that data lives on your Xbox hard drive. So it'll just go, oh, you unlocked that. Great. Here's a bonus. So,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
So that's a little piece on that. Are you ever going to play Banjo-Tooie, Josh?
No.
No. Oh, not even interested in checking it out.
I'm sorry. The most I'll play of Banjo is probably going to be him in Smash Brothers now.
My current main.
It's sad. Yeah. It's sad because like I really want to like this. I want to go into this thinking like maybe this is actually going to be a good game.
What do you think needs to be fixed? Like if they tomorrow announce Microsoft's going to give us a brand new, proper, traditional Banjo platformer. What do you think needs to be fixed, in your opinion?
I don't know. I just think that platforming games have come a long way.
Sure.
Like, even, like, swimming in Mario Odyssey wasn't terrible. Like, it's just the game itself, it's too clunky. And I think that it's just a problem from the N64.
Sure.
Everything in that era of gaming is just too clunky. They're trying to do too many things at one time, and it's not the game can't translate into the controller.
Yes.
Like, it's just, I don't know. It's everything about that era that's just not good. And I don't get it.
I will not deny that there are a lot of components of that era in multiple games that, yes, they've aged very poorly. I forget. I think I was watching a Beta 64 or some other type of YouTube series that goes over like the history of certain kind of video games. And the only thing I can say I remember is this line, because I think it's true. They described something from the N64 era as a broken egg on the pathway to gaming omelets. You know, like things in this were bad, but, or like things in this example game were bad, but they were part of a process that got us towards, you know, the refined controls and like the polished games that we have today. So Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from, and I agree. A lot of things in this era were bumpy because they were still figuring things out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, and hopefully it doesn't get any worse.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you completely that you're wrong, and I disagree with you on all points. This is one of those games where I didn't replay it before we recorded because I was like, I know this game, so I don't need to.
Oh yeah,
but I'm probably gonna go play it. I'm not gonna lie, you have spurred me.
No, it's good
to play it. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's on Game Pass.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very sorry that it didn't do it for you. But I admire your initiative to try new things. It's something I should totally do this year. I should stop living in the past and, you know, see what gaming's future has for me.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.